You are listening to a White Phosphorus Pictures podcast.
Broadcasting under the night sky from the edge of an undisclosed jungle on the Gulf of Mexico, I'm Christopher Garitano, your voice in the night. For the next hour, allow me to be your guide into the bizarre unknown, the fantastic macabre, and together we'll journey to that borderland between fiction and reality, a place beyond all rational explanation. We are now off to the witch. Happy October, everybody, and welcome to the Off to the Witch newsletter. It is now autumn. Currently, there are many countries around the world that have now adopted the traditions of Halloween, and its origins date back thousands of years. It's believed to date back thousands of years to the Druids and then the Celtic people. And many of the original traditions that were born around that time have carried on one way or another. Many have said that that it's changed drastically since then. I don't believe that. I see a more lighthearted version of what was originally celebrated, and I cover a lot of the origin story of Halloween in my new first chapter of my new docuseries, A Haunting We Will Go. You know, I always wanted to see the ultimate Halloween special, and I've seen bits and pieces of it over the years. The Halloween special was a thing, and they were mostly animated. But then, you know, Disney had Disney's Halloween Treat. That was fantastic. It was a variety, and it celebrated everything this holiday truly is. Now, I know a lot of people out there, especially in the conspiratorial world, are very fearful of this holiday. They feel like there is something sinister inserted in its midst, and it's going to corrupt and destroy the minds of good people and destroy their energy. I will be one of the people that will stand by the antithesis of that. I don't believe that Halloween is detrimental in its existence. I think it brings people great joy, and I feel like it's healthy to celebrate our mortality as well as the mystery of life and death. And all of that is in the world of the Halloween season. It's a holiday that lasts an entire month, in my opinion, and it builds up to its New Year's Eve. I've experienced nothing but positivity, creativity, imagination, and inspiration in the month of October since I was born, or as far back as I can remember. So I don't walk around with those fears, and you shouldn't either. Enjoy this month. People all over the world now, I would say, are enjoying this more than ever. And it's evolved too. You know, people bring up the origins of certain holidays almost as if to try and dismiss the traditions of the modern times. And I don't believe that anything in the past should supersede the way people do things now. Holidays evolve, cultures evolve, and we should allow that naturally to happen. We should never bring up the past to try and destroy something that has now evolved into something that is pleasant. Now, speaking of things that are hidden and always dancing on that fine line between reality and fiction, currently, in fact, today, this afternoon, there is something that occurred that lends to a conspiracy, and one in the world of horror literature and horror movies. And now, I'm not sure if any of you have read this book, but in 06, Stephen King published a book called Cell. It's one of my favorite Stephen King books. I've been reading his books for a long time. Obviously, he's helped shape a lot of our imaginations. And so Cell, you know, talking about science fiction and horror writers as prophets, Stephen King wrote a book, essentially, at its core, is that everyone with a cell phone experienced a mysterious signal that ended up turning them into ravenous, zombie-like, murderous creatures, maniacs, running around the streets, destroying people, destroying landscapes, destroying cars, everything they could think of. It's just total mayhem. And it follows this graphic artist and a group of people trying to survive. You know, Stephen King has used this dynamic many times. Now, I've heard variations of this conspiracy before, but it's literally Stephen King's cell, come to life. And I'm just going to read you something out of AP News. And there were a lot of reports on this, but this one's headline is conspiracy theories about today's FEMA emergency alert test spread online. The claim was an emergency broadcast system test on October 4th will send a signal to cell phones nationwide in order to activate nanoparticles such as graphene oxide that have been introduced into people's bodies. AP's assessment? False. The October 4th test of the nationwide emergency alert system uses the same familiar audio tone that's been used since 1960s to broadcast warnings across the country. A spokesperson for the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which is overseeing the test, also said there are no known adverse health effects from the signal. The claims revived long-debunked conspiracy theories about the contents of the COVID-19 vaccine. So in other words, this conspiracy claims that the cell phones sent out a signal today, activating something that was injected to everyone who received the COVID-19 vaccine. Okay, now a lot of people that know my work think that automatically I'm going to adopt every single one of these conspiracy theories, and I say you're not really paying attention to my work. I stand in a place of critical thinking and neutrality. This is where I operate from. I am not about to believe in every conspiracy theory that comes my way. However, okay, there are conspiracies that are just as elaborate as any of the other conspiracies. They're just as elaborate. So I stand at a place of critical thinking where I can collect information and process it in a very sober way. I don't thrive on the idea that these conspiracies might be real. But I also know that there are a lot of conspiracies that have happened and continue to happen. Now, the last 3 years and all of the things that have happened to us have opened my mind to the idea that we could be under the effect of a major conspiracy. Because, like I've said before, many of the behaviors of politicians and just the odd circumstances of things that have unfolded in the last several years, they seem planned to me, okay? I'm not saying that COVID-19 isn't real. I've had it twice. It's real. The behavior of everyone in these situations, to the lockdowns, to everyone contradicting themselves in terms of how rules were put upon everybody, however they were able to be broken by certain events and certain ideas, all of this seemed like it was strategically organized, 100%. Not to mention the deluge of shootings that continue to happen, and all of these things that seem to be conveniently moving an enormous change, one that might not benefit us. The last 3 years have opened my mind that the most elaborate conspiracies could happen, and maybe are happening. I don't want to live that way, though. I don't, you know, even in the past, you know, a decade of making the Montauk Chronicles stuff, I never wanted to believe that it was true. Not once. I had no interest. You know, the idea of looking into conspiracies, I guess for some hobbyists or people find interest in it like they do looking into serial killers, I guess because of the mystery aspect to it. But it's very different than reading about a ghost story, or reading a story about a cryptozoological creature, a mysterious beast in the woods somewhere, or even a ship in the sky, you know, a strange craft, a UFO, UAP, as everyone's calling it now. And those things have an air of mystery to them that is not too disturbing. It doesn't set us up for the end. You know, I mean, possibly an alien invasion or something like that could occur, as it's been portrayed in movies, but the conspiratorial stuff is almost like a finite definition stating that we're doomed, and I don't want to believe we're doomed. I really don't. I don't want to believe that every single leader of the world is conspiring against us and just using us as cattle or slaves. Unfortunately, there is some evidence to lend to that. Now, this signal went off and caught me off guard today. I heard it on my phone. Now I wonder, is there any truth to this conspiracy? Could Stephen King's cell come true? And when I first read it in 06, it was creepy because it was when I first also in 06 started shooting the first version of Montauk Chronicles. And I spoke to Al Bielek at his home in Fort Myers, Florida. And I believe sometime that year I was reading Stephen King's cell and I was, wow, you know, this is apropos. This is timely. This is of the moment that I'm starting to hear these things. And when I heard the gentleman that I first interviewed, Al Bielek, Preston Nichols, Stuart Swerdlow, all those people that were telling these tales back then, James Bruce, you know, I took it into consideration lightly. I did not want to believe it. And then in the ensuing years, I learned so much about conspiracies that I knew that it was a strong possibility that they're still going on. Just using your intellect, just understanding that if this happened in the first place, this didn't happen in ancient times. This was in recent times. You know, this happened in the last century. More than several proven conspiracies. Okay. 40, 50, 60 years ago. They happened here in the United States, and they happened all over the world. So, to believe that your cell phone's going to send out a signal if these major conspiracies are still going on, that is a possibility. That is a possibility, but how do we deal with it? We're surrounded by computers. We're surrounded by technology. You know, people are wearing smart watches. They have smart earphones. They have computers surrounding them every day. They don't need to put a signal out through the cell phone. But is it possible? Is it possible that Stephen King's cell could come true? You know, this might be an interesting conversation to have with Stephen King himself. As I recall, the About the Author section in the cell book stated that Stephen King to this day does not own a cell phone. And I wonder if that's out of superstition of his own idea. Curious. I'd love to speak to the man one day. You know, he has, just like all of you, or just like many people around the world for a long time now, has helped shape everybody's imaginations. If you think about that for a little while, you'll know it's true. He created so many different incredible stories and characters that literally shaped the imagination of people around the world. That's incredible. That's an incredible reach. I mean, I've even heard conspiracy theories about Stephen King himself. How do these conspiracies arise? They arise from distrust. Because if you felt like you could trust your leaders, if you felt like everything they were saying, they were coming through with, and they were doing it for you, and we were living good, and good things are happening. You know, I mean, look, the world's never going to be perfect, but we would know it. Just like we know there's something wrong right now, we would know if things were good, okay? And they're not. You know, in terms of leadership and in terms of the government, in terms of the way society's being handled, it's not good. And that is what lends to people not trusting the government and believing in a conspiracy like this, that they believe they're being led down a path of destruction, of slavery of the mind, slavery of the soul. That is why these people, you know, for any politician that would ever listen to this show, let me tell you right now, this is why the people don't trust you, okay? Because none of you are doing a good job. None of you, not one of you. And so, you know, to end this section of my rant today, the leaders of the world right now are failing. They're not doing their jobs. And we need to find better people to lead this world.
After these messages, be right back.
There are those who say that this quiet town holds many secrets. Legend has it that beneath this very tower, a dark force had its eyes set on the children.
We were told that what was going on there was for the benefit of humanity.
What would you say to the people who say, well, all these children were kidnapped and murdered and you were a part of it? What would you tell them?
I did approve of it, but there was nothing I could do about it.
They wanted a large number of programmed boys to be used for mind control operations.
And there are others who say it's still happening to this day.
I don't know, I for myself find it a little suspicious that all the evidence has been conveniently destroyed.
Let's put it this way. If you're sitting there with 20 guns pointed at you, what are you gonna do? Whatever the hell they want!
Watch Montauk Chronicles now for free on Tubi, Plex, Roku, and available for download on Amazon and Apple TV.
This series presents information based in part on theory and conjecture. The producer's purpose is to suggest some possible explanations, but not necessarily the only ones, to the mysteries we will examine.
Officially living in the Twilight Zone. You can go down every category that occurred in that wonderful show created originally by Rod Serling in the 1950s. And we are living one way or another, part of it. You know, each of those episodes are brilliant. They are, in my opinion, the epitome of science fiction becoming real. I never thought the barriers would break open. I never thought that we'd be living, literally living, in all of these stories that we read in fiction over the years. And this is will forever be my constant theme. Even in a very metaphysical horror film I'm writing right now and will be making next year, it has similar themes to it. You know, it seems like every story I come up with has that kind of metaphysical dancing between fiction and reality feel to it, because all is possible. You know, even in recent times, I've met people, several people, that claim they've seen werewolves. And I've read these stories before because they've occurred throughout history. Werewolves or dogmen or either a shape-shifting creature or some type of upright, walking, intelligent, mythical creature. Most of us grew up, including myself, fine with the idea that these things were meant to be on the screen and on the page and in artwork. But now, there are people all around the world declaring that they've encountered these things and feeling safe to do so. So on next week's episode, I have Bettina Moss, and she tells her story. She's had several odd encounters, but I think one of her most profound stories is that of running into one of these beasts. I do have an annex story as well from Monica, who was on the show previously, a couple of episodes ago, and she told a similar tale. So both of those will be in next week's episode of Off to the Witch. I'm doing my best to celebrate this month in every way I can, and I have a few releases coming out outside of the new episodes. My book, South Texas Blues, is about perhaps the most infamous horror film ever made, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's a story, a dramatic interpretation of what happened on the set of that film when they were making it. And it was a crazy situation, and I can't wait for you to read it. You know, it's been told before here and there in interviews, but I dramatized it in a three-act structure. in a very solid story with Tobe Hooper as our main character. It is now in development officially with a big production company and a studio to become a limited series for television. Before you get a chance to see that, and we won't even start shooting that until next year, if you're interested in this story, and trust me, I wrote it because I was interested. It's such a wild tale. Come and pick up the book. It'll be available beginning on October 13th through Amazon, and it'll be available in paperback, Kindle, and I am making a hardcover version for people that prefer that. It will also be in bookstores around the United States and the UK. You know, this is about the making of a horror film that gave people nightmares and continues to give after 50 years, you know, 50 years old, this movie made in Texas is still giving people nightmares and will continue to. And it was just translated into a video game now, a very popular video game. I never thought this stuff would come out when I was a kid. I believe there was like an Atari game in the early 80s, but when I first saw the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I was a kid, and you know, my parents owned a video store at the time, and I had access to a lot of movies. And so back then, it's not what it is now. You know, you can walk in Walmart and find action figures of Leatherface. It wasn't like that. That was a creepy movie. It was like a taboo to watch. I mean, it was banned in England, you know. It was a video nasty, as they called it. And so it had a feel to it, too, that, you know, wow, this is documentary-like. This is really creepy, very believable. When I was a kid, I was terrified. Terrified. Ed Neal, as the hitchhiker, was a... I had nightmares of that guy. And, you know, Gunnar Hansen as Leatherface. I mean, it was so convincing, convincingly real, that has now been made into a gimmick. But it doesn't change the power of that original film and the lack of committee behind it. In other words, this wasn't made by a Hollywood think tank, okay? We've seen so many attempts at that, and it fails miserably each time because movies, good movies, no good movie, and no good horror film was ever made by some think tank in a boardroom. It doesn't work out that way. The think tank is usually a bunch of crazy artists that get together and say, let's do this. And then there are some movies that were simply made to as a potboiler. Now, I would say Texas Chainsaw Massacre bordered on the line between potboiler and a piece of crazy artwork. The greatest horror movies that scared people were all made by these crazy visionaries, and a good deal of them were made somewhat independently, well outside of the studio system. And the ones that were made within a studio system, even though they were still made by independent people, like Stanley Kubrick's The Shining or The Exorcist, you know, that was a studio picture. But William Friedkin was a radical director, and he tried a lot of things that wouldn't even be permitted on a set today to get the effect that was achieved in that movie. And not one of those Exorcist movies that followed could ever meet up to the strength and power of that original movie. Not one. Part 3 was pretty good. It was close. It was a great sequel, but it just, none of them matched the power of that film. And just like the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, The Exorcist has become embedded in pop culture now. You can get a Reagan play sets with the two, you know, Father Merrin and Father Karras standing above the bed, and it's like a toy set, you know. Like, when that movie came out, nobody was thinking of buying toys. I'm sure of it, maybe a few people, but you know. Another thing I wanted to talk about in this wonderful month of October is A Haunting We Will Go. It is the first feature-length chapter of my new docu-series. I have several in production right now. And A Haunting We Will Go began with the idea to make the ultimate Halloween special. And there are three strong, equally strong categories in this motion picture documentary. It's horror movies, Halloween, and ghost stories. And I wanted to do something that was quite different than what we keep seeing every Halloween that's being projected to us from most of the networks that make ghost shows. is that they seem to be repeating themselves over and over and over and over again. And they assume that's what people want, and maybe they do. But I didn't want to do that. I wanted to make something different, and I did. And so shortly, you'll get to see an extended preview trailer of A Haunting We Will Go. I put out a little teaser last year while I was, you know, still not even halfway done with making it. But this new trailer is going to show you a lot more. And it'll give you a better handle on the style of what you're about to see. And each of the chapters in my new docuseries are completely different from each other, different subject matter. The one that's following, and it's mostly done, is called, tentatively titled, called Monsters Among Us. And it is about the savagery of living in an environment where you could be devoured. And this is a suburban environment where you can be devoured by essentially a prehistoric beast. Crocs and gators can come right out of your backyard and destroy you. That's rare. And it's here in Florida. It just happened recently. Even in recent headlines, they found a huge gator crawling around with a body in its mouth. And I grew up in New York. And there was that movie in the late 70s with Robert Forster. It was called Alligator. It opens up with a variation of an urban legend of gators being bought in, well, yeah, it's a variation of the urban legend where gators were bought in Chinatown or places like that, baby gators. They started to get too big, and then somebody flushes them down the toilet and they survived in the sewer system. So Monsters Among Us opens with that urban legend. And the idea of just changing your environment. Whereas, you know, this killer gator, big gator in Alligator, is running around the whole movie, destroying anything that gets in its path, and it's surviving in the sewer systems underneath the city. Is that, number one, there's some truth to that, by the way. And second to that, you just change your environment. So I changed my environment. I moved from, well, New York to Michigan, but then from Michigan to Florida. And now the idea of being devoured by something like that is a very real possibility, which, you know, I do my best to keep an eye out and stay away from certain situations. However, when I'm making Monsters Among Us, I'm very close to gators and crocs, and you'll see. And the recreations are going to be very scary. We still have to shoot a bunch of those, and you know, I'm trying to bring something different to the table with my new docuseries and everything I make from here on in. It's just not worth making if I'm copying someone or if I'm making something that was done before. To me, that's extremely boring. And I'm also the audience, so I'm assuming it's boring for you too, and I wouldn't do that. You can't please everybody, and I'm not interested in doing that. But I am interested in doing something that I believe, that I strongly believe is worth making. And so that's what we're doing. So sometime just before Halloween, I would say just about a week before Halloween, you'll get to see the new trailer for A Haunting We Will Go. And the actual docuseries chapter will be released sometime in the first quarter of next year. I needed a little extra time on it. It's coming out so good. And now I'm starting to get distribution offers. So it's, you know, that part is very important. I worked on it for a very long time, made a great investment, and I couldn't just rush it out for Halloween. And so, even though to me it's the ultimate Halloween special, I think we love this stuff all year round. And it's also about horror films and ghost stories. And, you know, I think it'll have a place any time of the year. And it is my best work so far, and I am so excited to release it. So thank you so much for joining me for another newsletter, and I will return next week with a brand new episode of Off to the Witch. Take care.